From the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, the Department of Justice and FBI are still under fire. Controversy around whether a COVID vaccine should be mandatory, and a church in California is fined for meeting despite taking numerous precautions. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and homeschool dad. Earlier this week, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins was joined by South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham. Senator Graham is the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, which oversees all areas of federal law. Senator Graham joined Tony to talk about how the Department of Justice and FBI handled the Trump and Clinton investigations.
Senator, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony, thanks for having me. Boy, you nailed it. If you're looking for bipartisanship, I think you'll find it on this issue that James Comey was a disaster as the director of FBI.
Well, when you look at what you're now uncovering, you know, we're you know, a few, five years removed from what was happening, you have revealed that there clearly was a double standard in the way the FBI treated the Hillary Clinton campaign as opposed to the Donald Trump campaign.
Yeah, well, it's just not me. The Horowitz report is found out that the dossier wasn't provided by a Russian in Russia. It was compiled by an employee of Christopher Steele, who is in the United States. The FISA court rebuked the FBI and the Department of Justice for providing it misleading and false information. Mr. Kleinsmith has been pled guilty to altering an email to keep the investigation going against Carter Page. So Crossfire Hurricane is one of the most corrupt investigations in the history of the FBI. What did I find? I found out that in 2015, a foreign government was lobbying the Clinton campaign, was trying to funnel money into the Clinton campaign illegally. The FBI found out about the effort and wanted to get a FISA warrant against a campaign operative who may have been an innocent victim, by the way. And the FBI said in Washington, no, you're not going to be able to get a warrant against a Clinton campaign operative until you brief Hillary Clinton and let her fix the problem. Now compare that to what happened with Trump. They had four counterintelligence investigations open against Trump campaign associates. They never once mentioned to him any of these investigations. They never gave him a chance to fix the problem. And when they gave him a generic briefing about just be aware of foreign influence, nothing specific, they sent an agent in to spy on President Trump and General Flynn. That's not a double standard. I don't know what is.
So, Senator Graham, this is just one of a number of things that have surfaced about the FBI and what has been occurring there within that organization, primarily surrounding the 2016 election. A lot of people, the question they have is, what's going to be done about it?
Well, my job is to make it as transparent as possible, and I think my committee's done a pretty good job of letting you know about things you didn't know before. Durham is a prosecutor looking at criminality. It won't be nearly as public. But if people are not fired and somebody doesn't go to jail for defrauding the court, it's likely to happen again. So my goal is to find out what happened with these counterintelligence investigations, why they became political weapons, how they became political weapons, and make sure it never happens again. I can't fire anybody. I can't put anybody in jail. But I am going to give James Comey a chance to come to the committee in September and tell his side of the story. He's doing op-ed pieces accusing Trump and Barr of corrupting the rule of law. I find that just unbelievable. And I tell you, Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump, and Lindsey Graham probably have the same view of James Comey. So I'm going to make sure he gets invited to the committee and he gets asked some questions. And he's never been asked real questions, but that will change if he comes to the committee.
And Senator, just so folks know, the role that you play in this as oversight, as the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, you can ask the questions, you can produce the information, but you're right, that's up to someone else to actually prosecute and then adjudicate those situations. But your role is to make sure that the Department of Justice, that is an executive branch entity, is operating within the confines of the law.
And what do we know here, Tony? According to the Inspector General's report, the dossier was not reliable. And here's the question for Comey. In April of 2017, he signed a warrant affidavit to the FISA court against Carter Page, and that affidavit said that the Russian subsource was truthful and credible. Well, he disavowed the document in January and March. They said he was Russian-based. He wasn't. So here's the question. How could the FBI director in April of 2017 sign a warrant affidavit using the dossier when in January and March, a couple months before, the guy who prepared the document said it was not verified. It was hearsay, bar talk, and half of it he didn't know where it came from. How could Comey not know that? How is it possible that the director of the FBI did not know that the entire case against Carter Page had fallen apart?
These are some troubling questions, and it I think points to a culture of I'm going to use the word corruption because it is a twisting of what is law and order. And I think, quite frankly, Senator, I think this is related to what's happening on the streets of America. If those at the very top can't abide by the law, I think it feeds the lawlessness that we see on the streets.
Well, what I worry about is trying to blame this on some lower level FBI people. The intel analyst and the case agent who interviewed the subsource in January and March prepared memos, and these memos are devastating to the reliability of the dossier to be used in court. That's why the court rebuked the FBI. The question is, did they tell anybody above them? I find it hard to believe that these two folks would not tell their superiors, but that's what we need to get to the bottom of, because it would be really unfair to just blame a few low-level people for right. system out of control. Klein Smith altered an email. He's a lawyer. There were numerous stop signs in all of these cases. General Flynn, they wanted to clear him January the 4th. The field agents did, that they saw no there, but it was Comey and others who kept pushing the Flynn case in the Oval Office. So you know, we just got to clean this up so it never happens again.
And that's the key point. It's happened in the past, but if we don't fix it, it'll happen again. Senator, thanks so much for taking time to join us, and thanks for staying on this. I know a lot of Americans want this cleaned up. They want it addressed.
More to come, Tony. Thank you very much.
All right. Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee.
You can find out more about Senator Graham when you visit tonyperkins.com. Also, while you're there, consider donating to the Ministry of Family Research Council and help us fulfill our mission to be your voice in Washington, D.C. for biblical principles and impact even more lives with the truth. Again, that's tonyperkins.com.
Do Christians have a biblical obligation to participate in government? Do Christians have a duty to vote? And if so, what principles should inform them while casting their ballots? How should pastors think about politics? And how can they shepherd their congregations well during an election season? Family Research Council's new second edition of Biblical Principles for Political Engagement provides biblical wisdom and clear answers to these questions to help you navigate the political landscape this election year. To access this important resource, visit frc.org/engage.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. Even though our quest for a vaccine for the coronavirus is still ongoing, there are those already demanding that the vaccine be mandatory for all people. Joining Tony to talk about the controversy is Dr. Jeff Barrows, Senior Vice President for Bioethics and Public Policy at Christian Medical and Dental Associations.
Dr. Barrows, thanks for joining us today.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Tony.
This is a very real threat. We have now public officials saying that they're going to mandate, and there's a multitude of ways in which this could be mandated. Tell us about it.
Well, they could make it a requirement for all different types of things, including schools and employers, to get your health benefits at the state level. There's a myriad of ways that they could make it mandatory, but they're using a form of utilitarian thinking, which is basically that the end, the good of society, justifies the means being forcing everyone and mandating that everyone get a vaccination. And utilitarian thinking is always dangerous, and it frequently causes unexpected results. And in this particular instance, we might have all kinds of safety issues that show up later that we aren't going to know at the beginning of time when this vaccine becomes available, assuming that we'll have one or more available early in 2021. So it's never good to use that form of justification.
Well, as Dr. Clark mentioned, this has been accelerated. Normally, it could take anywhere from 4 to 7 years, I assume, to develop these vaccines. And we're talking here less than a year we'll have a vaccine out. And so there are certainly a lot of questions that would surround that. Wouldn't this be unprecedented in terms of, as Dr. Clark said, mandatory vaccination for adults?
I don't know of any other time in my recent memory of any vaccination being mandated for everyone, for all adults. I can't think of an example recently. And the other reason that this would be problematic is the fact that some of these vaccines are created with the use of fetal cell lines.
Right.
And that,
in
that
fact,
is,
one,
causes a moral issue.
I think one that is at the very first one that is in phase three trials that may be the first out, it does, if I'm not mistaken, have fetal tissue in it.
Yeah, AstraZeneca's is one that is definitely going to use fetal cells in order to produce the adenovirus, which acts as the carrier. It's the mechanism that the vaccine makers are using to take the genetic material into the cells of the body receiving, of the person receiving the vaccine. And so that's got a whole moral issue associated with it. This is not new technology, however. There are current vaccines out there that right now that still use these same fetal cell lines. But mandating the vaccine without giving anybody the opportunity that might have a moral objection to the vaccine is just really not acceptable.
So how do you see this playing out, Dr. Barrows, where this is unprecedented? Of course, there's this fear that's been manufactured, and so some people will willingly submit to this. But there are others, and there are a lot of my listeners, and I stand with them. I mean, I'm not an anti-vaccine person, but I think it should be up to the parents and to the individual. I do not think it should be government mandated. How will this be resisted?
Well, I think that if in fact it spreads across the states, I mean, as you talked earlier, Virginia is the first state. Hopefully it does not spread, and hopefully it doesn't become a federal issue where the federal government begins to mandate it across the country. It will put a lot of your listeners in a very awkward position where they're going to have to be forced to be either take the vaccine against their will or perhaps lose their job, lose their ability to get health care, lose a lot of their normal rights within society. And I think that would be a tragedy. I think we need to stop the efforts to make it mandatory long before we reach that point.
Yeah, and as you're pointing out, a multitude of ways that this could be mandated where they're not going to, kick your door down in your house and come in and give you a vaccination. But if you want to go to a sporting event, you want to go to the restaurant, you want to go into a public place, you've got to show proof of vaccination. And so basically you're excluded until you can prove that you've been vaccinated. But where does it come in when you have the antibodies? Like, I've had the coronavirus, and so I have the antibodies. Where does that factor into the need for vaccination?
That absolutely must be factored in. In fact, I can tell you that in all probability, anybody who has had the virus and has antibodies, their reaction to a vaccine will be a stronger reaction. They will get more of a febrile illness because their body is seeing the vaccine as a renewal of the virus, of the COVID-19 virus, and so their body is naturally going to react against it. Not that they would become very sick, but they might have several days of a febrile episode of illness, not feeling well, And so there should be some way of testing people ahead of time whether or not they've had the virus, and then there would be no need to give them the vaccine.
Yeah, Dr. Barros, I'm more concerned about the fear that has been generated about the virus than the virus itself.
And there's a lot of conspiracy theories that are out there as well. They're just very wild. I would not want anyone to refuse to get the vaccine on the basis of one of these wild conspiracy theories. But if we are forced with a situation where there is only one vaccine that is proven to be safe and effective, and that vaccine happens to be one of the ones that was created in part through the use of a fetal cell line from an abortion, I think it's just incumbent on our government, state or federal, that would allow the person to object to getting that vaccine just on religious grounds alone.
I could not agree with you more. Dr. Jeff Barros, thanks so much for joining us today and providing insight into an issue that a lot of our listeners care about.
Well, my pleasure to be with you.
You can find out more about Dr. Barros when you visit TonyPerkins.com. We'd also encourage you to help FRC continue to produce this radio program. Just visit TonyPerkins.com and click on the donate button. That's TonyPerkins.com.
News stories about the assaults in Nigeria are rarely reported by the media. But in recent years, persecution of Christians in Nigeria has persistently increased. A July 15, 2020 headline reports that over 1,000 Nigerian Christians were killed in the first 6 months of 2020. This is in addition to 11,000 Christians who have been killed since June 2015. For more info, read FRC's latest publication, The Crisis of Christian Persecution in Nigeria, at frc.org/Nigeria.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. As we've talked about on this program before, the state of California has led the charge in doing everything they can to stop Christians from meeting together for worship, while at the same time encouraging massive crowds of protesters. Joining Tony is Rob McCoy, pastor of Godspeak Calvary Chapel, who was just fined and held in contempt of court for holding indoor worship services.
Pastor McCoy, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. Good to be with you.
All right. So did this come as a surprise on Friday, the finding of the judge?
I had no idea what to expect. I'd been told all kinds of things. But I think the surprise was their three witnesses, their health officers that had come out and written up a 61-page report on the violations of our church as far as no social distancing and not wearing masks. A congregant took a picture of these three health officers in the car, all together, not wearing masks. So they perjured themselves, and their testimony was still permitted. And Judge O'Neill reduced the fine from $1,000 per incident to $500, which made it $3,000. They asked for attorney fees, but he wasn't inclined to give that. And, of course, this Sunday we were again in violation of the restraining order. We were wide open.
So what's next? What's the next step here? I mean, you've been meeting since May 31st, as we talked about last time, and you're not the only one. There's many churches doing that. You know, for a while, you know, when we were trying to figure out where this virus was going, you know, there was this voluntary compliance. But now it is more facts come to the forefront. Churches are saying, wait a minute, we need to meet. The people need to be together. So you've been meeting for a while. What's the next step here? What happens next?
Well, we're going to have a cross complaint. We're going to have a case that will go before the judge at the end of this month. And the issue at hand is, and this was off bcemergency.com, it's the county numbers. The issue at hand is that there's been 102 deaths in our county of 856,000. And of the 102 deaths, only two of them died from COVID. 100 died with COVID. Mm-hmm. We had an overdose. Young man, and they attributed it to a COVID death because he had COVID when he overdosed. The numbers are a mess. They know it. I said it in the courthouse, and we're going to have a chance to be heard. And everyone's starting to get sick of these draconian measures that are destroying our community. And they're rising up. People are upset.
Well, I want to get to the foundation of that in terms of, as a pastor, you know, how you see this. But first, I want to go back to this kind of double standard. I mean, you talked about the right. health officers being in the car, no mask altogether, no social distancing. I mean, I see it on airplanes as I've traveled. Every seat on the plane is packed. You know, there's not much social distancing there. I wish there was at times, but there's not. But even like at the Walmart. The Walmarts where the hundreds of cars are in the parking lot, hundreds of people going inside. I mean, why the different standard for the church?
Well, the idea, especially in California, I can only assume, Tony, but the two entities where you do polling are churches and schools. And if they're going to do vote by mail, they got to close churches and schools. And if they're going to, I mean, the two mandated reporters for abuse are churches and schools are closed. And spousal abuse and child abuses, the numbers are going through the roof. And they're not even addressing any of these issues, and they don't understand the essential nature of the church, that when the church is closed, there's a 5 times greater suicide rate. And they're not addressing any of those issues. And they politicize this virus, and it's awful, and people are suffering. Yeah. And I want to make it about church and state, but the reality is it's about Americans losing their liberty in general, and liberty is God's idea, and the church has to stand on behalf of that.
So true. When you, some would push back and say, well, Pastor, you can do online services. There's other ways. You don't have to meet in person. How do you respond to that?
That's like watching a fireplace on your internet. There's no warmth. And there's the idea, there's the we've been open since May 31st, not a single case, not one case. And this virus, we know, early on we didn't know its virility. Now we do.
Yes.
65 and older with comorbidity. So we've done our homework. Open the churches. People need to fellowship. They need encouragement. They want to worship God in community. And any epidemiologist worth their weight understands that a virus, that the people need to be exposed to it to the extent that they build immunity. And we just allowed them to close the churches for no reason. And they'll do it. California's a perfect example. And then they put us on the internet, and they have us do live stream, and then the tech oligarchy, you know, censors our videos because we put frontline doctors on. It doesn't work that way. We have to demand liberty because it's an inalienable right that God has given us. And it's our right and our duty to push back.
But there's also, I think, a spiritual element to the benefit of our community. When churches are vibrant, they're meeting, they're engaged, it has an effect that benefits everyone in a community. Is it coincidence that we've seen the riots and the violence in the streets of America while our churches have been shut down? I don't think so. I think there's a correlation. I think there's a relationship.
If you read Solzhenitsyn's Gulag Archipelago, you read that and you see that the thing they closed in the Soviet Union were the churches and the gymnasiums. They muzzle you, they distance you, and they do it without any empirical data. And then they call you a conspiracy theorist and everything else because you question, and you just look at the numbers, and they can't even defend the numbers anymore. And if we don't do something for the sake of our neighbors, 65% of our restaurants in our county will never open. People have lost their life savings. And the elected officials say we're in this together. No, they aren't. They've never missed a paycheck. Our people are suffering. It's awful what they're doing. And we must love our neighbors and protect them from an overreaching government. We must.
So, Pastor Rob McCoy, for those, and I'm kind of setting you up for this question because I've heard it's been asked of me, but those that would say, well, Scripture says that we're to render unto Caesar, we're to obey the authorities. How do you respond to that?
I agree. That's Romans 13. It's a wonderful passage. But what I would say to anyone who'd say I'm in violation of it, I'd say, if you don't understand the form of government in which you live in a constitutional republic that declares the authority to be the first three words of the preamble, we the people, and our elected officials governed by our consent. And if they violate the Constitution they swore to defend, our declaration says it's our right and our duty to push back, to protect those inalienable rights endowed by our Creator. So I am applying Romans 13. I'm not in disobedience. I'm in obedience to Romans 13. Because we are here for the good of mankind. We must engage in the public square. The word ecclesia doesn't mean church. It means public square. It means assembly. Tyndale and the Geneva Bible translated it correctly. It was King James who put church because he wanted to control it. And we must, Galatians 3, Tony, the law is a schoolteacher, it's a guardian to protect us and point us to Christ until faith comes. And as Christians, we have to contend in that public square for good civic laws that protect the entirety of our community until faith comes. And we're not doing that. We're just not doing that.
I would agree 100%. And I want to go back and just underscore what you said earlier. We've talked about on this program before. You know, when we didn't know anything about this virus, when it was new, and when there was this kind of request for voluntary compliance, hey, let's 15 days to slow the spread, and then it went to 30. You know, hey, until we can get a handle on this, we'll do our part. But it's very evident now, as more information has come to the forefront, this is really about control, as you pointed out. And it is also correct that this is a government of the people, for the people, and by the people, and it is a rule of law, which is the Constitution. And no one person, no governor, no mayor, no county official has the ultimate say in our country. And I do think it's time for pastors to stand in a rightful manner, as you are, and challenge those unlawful authorities. So I applaud you for your stand, for setting an example to other pastors.
Well, thank you, Tony. And I last thing I'd share with you is that the supervisors and the elected officials, I've worked with all of them, having been the mayor of our city. And I was with them during the shooting of the Borderline, where we lost 12 of our young kids and two of them were our congregants. I love these elected officials. They're my friends. But they're trapped by a state that is overreaching, and they're scared too. And they're looking to the church for some moral leadership. And pushing back, they're yielding. No inspectors came this Sunday, and we were packed to capacity. And I think if everyone starts doing that, our community is going to be healthier. The church is essential, especially right now.
No question. Pastor Rob McCoy, thanks so much for joining us. We'll be in touch very soon.
Thank you, Tony.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.